our guest today, Tina Adair. If you remember or have gone back and listened to the archive from October of 2020, I had a wonderful time with Tina Adair as she was releasing the single 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses. We focused on that song. We knew there was an album coming out. I made Tina promise that when the new album comes out, she'll send it to me. I got it. And that we'll talk about it again. We'll go through the whole thing. 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses is indicative of the quality of this entire recording. The album has her name, Tina Adair. It's on EMG, and it's just fine. 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses has been in the top of so many charts since October of last year. It remains there. It's a great song, but the vocals are just phenomenal. So you're going to enjoy this. Thanks again for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. There, for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard Can't Get You Off My Mind, and that's from Tina Adair's new album on EMG. I have Tina on the phone. Tina, how are you doing today?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks so much for being available. And you know, last October, to the listeners, they know this, and you know this, and I know this. We had a nice discussion about 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses, which is also on one of the songs on the new full release CD. And that song has done so well. You must be so happy with how that's gone. It's just done gangbusters. I mean, to me, it's just a solid song. I play it as often as I can. You got to be pretty happy with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm real thrilled. I'm thrilled with it all and happy to finally have this new album out and available for everyone. So it's been a, quite the year, I tell you. And so it's we're excited to finally have it out.
Yeah. Now, the song we let off with for the people to listen to, Can't Get You Off My Mind, is that going to be the new single that comes out?
Yes, that is going to be the new single, and so we're excited about that. That was such a fun tune. It turned out to be, you know, it's a Hank Williams tune,
yeah.
I'm a huge Hank Williams fan, and we put that, it's kind of a country western swing, you know, to it, and Tim Crouch's fiddles, the triple fiddles on it, I just get me every time. So I love it. We had a lot of fun with that.
It's a nice up-tempo. Was it that up-tempo when Hank did it? I mean, he did so many different...
No,
I didn't think so.
It was a little bit slower.
That's what I thought.
So, and it's been done, of course, covered several times and everything, but we just, I thought... this would be a nice approach to it for the record, something a little different.
Yeah, I like it. The record, we're talking about the album, which is just self-titled, Tina Adair. I said just. It's not like, oh, gosh, that's the only title. But, I mean, that's the title. It's your album. It's your name. And it's on EMG. It has 11 songs on it. And two of them you co-wrote.
I did. It was the second single, Won't Be Crying Over You. I co-wrote with my... sister Sadie's sister Gina Britt, and actually that was the first time that she and I had gotten to write together out of all these years of us. We've been with sister Sadie for 9 years, and then the other one was Let Each Other Go, and that's another co-write again with one of my Sadie's sisters, Beanie Richardson. She and I are big traditional country music fans, and I tell you, this one, we wrote this one in the open key of E. There's nothing better than a soul cold country song in the open key of E.
You know, Deanie was on the show not long ago, and she's just remarkable to me. I love everything about her, all the music that she did and pulled into that album, Circle Up. But just all those great connections that you've always had, but now we've mentioned Sister Sadie twice already as people that you've written with, Gina Britt, Deanie Richardson. Really was an all-star band. I mean, so all those great people that you've worked with and recorded with, every one of them is a headliner, in my opinion.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm a lucky girl, Steve.
Well, you know, all of us have to have luck at some point to get through. But but I will tell you this: Sister Sadie was just strong, top to bottom, and showed everybody what that group can do, and I'm tickled when I see you have co-writes that you're still in touch with. Of course, you're still in touch with them,
we're playing. I mean, we go back out on tour in August, so yeah.
Well, good. I was going to ask you about that. Off the air, we were talking a little bit about. It appears, for right now, that things are opening up a little bit, and that band, Sister Sadie, whoever wants to get out and perform, will have the opportunity to get back out. And I will bet you that all the bands and all the performers, including you, are so anxious to get out there, and the audience is probably just salivating at the opportunity to hear live music again.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think everyone is itching to get back out and just, you know, excited to see things opening back up and us to get back to some sort of normalcy. You know, I think we're turning a corner, and I think it's looking good. It's looking positive. Things are really open back up in Nashville now, and I'm sure they are most everywhere else. But things are really opening back up, and we're excited. We go back out starting August the 6th. We start at the Pickin' and Parsons Festival in Parsons, West Virginia. So, and then we've got a full fall schedule. As much as we can play, you know, with Sister Sadie and being out on the road and everything. But we've got a pretty busy fall, which we're not complaining at all, because we haven't hit a lick together since December the 5th of last year when we played the Opry. So that was about the last time, and that was that's been too long.
Let me ask you this. I'm talking to Tina Adair, if you're just tuning in. And we're talking about the new album, which is named Tina Adair. It's on EMG. It's a great album. There are 11 cuts on it. Talking a little bit about getting back out into performing. Now, you're a veteran. You are a veteran from longtime performances. But as you approach that first appearance, and everybody's been off like what, a year and a half. Do you feel a little bit extra anxious or nervous about hitting that first note again, or you just feel like it's just another day?
I'm not anxious. I'm excited, and I'm not nervous. I don't get too nervous. I'm a ham, Steve. So stage is my home. Okay, there's nothing I love more than being, you know, like engaged with an audience. Let's put it that way. I love making people laugh and then singing to them and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, making the audience feel like they're a part of something, you know, part of the show or whatever, you know. So I'm just excited more so than, you know, I will say this. I probably need to get my mandolin back out of the case and get my chops up on that.
Oh, yeah.
I sing and play every day, but I don't, you know, my voice is, I always have always said my voice is my first instrument, you know, and everything. But, I probably need to get my mandolin out, change the strings on it.
Well, I think so. Dust it off, maybe, change some strings.
Polish it up a little bit.
Yeah.
If I change the strings, then see how much they stay in tune.
How long, when you change, I played mandolin for a little bit. And let me just, this has nothing to do with what the serious topic that we're talking about, the new album, but I know how long I have to keep retuning banjo strings. I play that a lot. And I actually pull them. I put them on, then I kind of pull them a little bit and get the stretch out. How long for mandolin strings before they quit stretching on you? The neck is so short. Is that a problem when you tune them up?
Yeah, well, it takes a good, with me sitting around stretching them and playing on it, you know, I have to play on it for an hour or so for them to get stretched out enough to where I'm comfortable going up on stage and playing without having to tune a whole bunch when I get up there, you know. And I hate tuning on stage. And I mean, it has to happen, because when you get your instruments out and you're out in the weather and stuff, they just have to get acclimated, and then they're moving all over the place and everything. But I use tuners called Waverly tuners on my mandolin.
Okay, good.
And they really help the mandolin stay in tune. I don't have to tune a whole lot on stage. But, yeah, but I tell you, I'm awful on strings. I'm awful. I have acidic hands, and so I'm awful. So I usually have to have a new set of strings on before, you know. I may could get two shows out of a set of strings, but for the most part, I usually have to change them.
Other musicians have told me that also, that it's something in their hands, and I know people that do it every show because they want the fresh sound.
Yeah.
But I know some that just feel like that their hands just affect and then just go ahead and do it. That's a lot of strings.
It is a lot of strings. Thank God for D'Addario. because they're good to me. But, you know, I will say this, you know, sometimes I can get a couple of shows out of them, and I'm always excited when that happens, because I actually like play. I don't like playing on brand new strings because of the stretching part. I like to have, you know, a little bit of time played on them, and then there's that sweet spot. But sometimes if I've just been really hard on them during a show in terms of sweating and you know, just all that, then I don't have really a choice. So,
you know, Tina, and I think that most of the audience, bluegrass audience, many of them get this, but if they had any idea of the struggle with strings, for every stringed instrument, the struggle with strings, that should be an entire show for me. Yes. Someday, the struggle with strings.
That's a podcast right there.
It is, yeah. And you know, there's eight on a mandolin, I've got a couple of them. Got them from my father, actually, from his childhood. And following those strings up, and then, I've done this before. Well, now I wear glasses to see up close, but you grab the wrong string as you're tightening them, and you think, well, that something must be broken, and another one snaps because you've been tightening the wrong string.
Yeah, and for those that know about the mandolin, having that little hook down the bottom on the bridge or the tailpiece,
yeah,
sometimes that popping out the way it shouldn't pop out, you know. That, yeah, sometimes I hate changing mandolins.
Well,
to be honest, I hate changing them.
We struggle for our art, and we appreciate your effort. We struggle for our art. Listen, back on the album, the second cut, Room 404, is written by a lot of good people that I know, Tammy Rogers and Tom Utes, Peter Cooper. That could be an episode of some ghost serial show. That's a bad scene. What's happening there?
Somebody told me the other day, they were like, that could be a little dark song.
It's a little dark. It's definitely a little dark.
I said, well, I can't. I don't know that I can say that because I don't ever want to offend anyone or anything. Mm. But I'm like, I told somebody in an interview the other day, I said, you know, well, I guess every bluegrass album's got to have their murder song, right?
Well, it does. And the thing about that one is, and people will hear it. They'll hear it on Unreal Bluegrass over time. But it's my favorite line is that in it, which you make it extra spooky when you give voice to it, is they know it's going to happen, but they don't know when.
Exactly.
And yet,
there is some that song. Tom Utes is a buddy of mine, and he and I work together at Belmont.
I'm a big fan of Tom. Big fan of Tom.
And oh yeah, he's great. And he sent me a whole bunch of songs and everything, and I kept coming back to that one, and kept coming back to it, and it just stuck in my head. And I'm a huge lyricist. Like, I love reading lyrics as I'm listening to the song because I don't want to miss anything about the lyrics, you know, or anything like that. And I had the lyrics to that and was reading them, and I just thought, man, there's just some clever lines in here with writing. Like, I put him through some bitter years with weary, worn-out souvenirs. I love that line.
Oh,
worn
out
souvenirs. It's just great, you know. And I just kept coming back to that song. And when Glenn Duncan and Adam Englehart produced the album, and when we were having our meetings about the songs and going through, you know, songs and listening and everything, I played this for them. I thought, man, we really, really should, you know, consider this. And they loved it, too. So, you know, and I'm being silly when I say every bluegrass album has to have its murder song or whatever. But, you know, I'm being silly with that. But, yeah, that is our contribution to the album
I like spooky songs. I like spooky songs.
Spooky
song. It slows it down a little bit just a little extra creepy. You recorded on this album one of my all-time favorite songs, and I was introduced to it by Country Gazette. And that recording, it's on Out to Lunch. I can still see the album cover. Why You Been Gone So Long.
I love it. Well, I obviously need a song from, I've heard now, you know, Mickey Newberry's version, he wrote it and everything, but I actually learned the song first heard it from Tony Rice's version, so big fan of Tony Rice, obviously, and when we were, you know, going through material again, Glenn said, you know, I'd love to hear you sing. And he started singing that, tell me, baby, now I am. And he said, I'd love to hear you sing that. You know, and I was like, I've never even thought about doing that song, but I like it because I love the song. And so when I didn't know exactly what vein Glenn was wanting to, what direction he was wanting to go with it until the day of we were recording. And he went in and, you know, got all the guys ready and everything. And so the pocket, and you know this, Steve, and especially being a banjo player yourself,
mm-hmm.
the pocket for this song with the bluegrass tempo and all, this particular tempo that we did it at, it's not the easiest to play in terms of finding that pocket where it's smooth and all. Of course, those guys that was on my album, I call them the A-list.
Boy, they're, you know, great.
They're the best in town.
Yeah.
It didn't take them long to find that pocket, you know, or whatever. But I love the vein in which that Glenn kind of drove that in, you know. And it turned out to be a lot of fun to record.
Oh, I'm happy to hear it again. I'm always happy to hear a good recording of it, and that's one that's on the album. Listen, I want you to talking to Tina A there about her new album on EMG, and it was October of 2020 when you and I talked at length about what you were up to, and then the new single 18 Wheels and a Dozen Roses, which is just a killer song. But I want you to introduce for the audience here another song from this album, Tina A there, and I think it's going to be Won't Be Crying Over You.
Yeah, let's do it. Won't Be Crying Over You. The last single that I had, this is a song that, like I say, Gina Britt and I wrote. And I'd had this song, the chorus and the melody and all written. And Gina was at my house one weekend, and I said, man, I got this chorus and melody and all. I said, you want to help me write some verses to it? She said, sure, because we'd always been threatening to write together, but just hadn't done it yet. And so we went out on my front porch and sat out there and took about 30 minutes and wrote a couple verses to it and everything. So it turned out to be the second single, and I'm proud of it. I'm proud to be able to have, you know, collaborated with her on it.
Well, let's play that one for the audience, and then don't go away. I'll be back. You don't go away, Tina, and the audience, not, don't go away. We're going to play this cut, and I'll be right back in a minute. Well, I'm not done with you yet.
Okay.
All right. There to the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, after an introduction from Tina Adair, you heard Won't Be Crying Over You off of the new album. When did the full album come out? When did the full album, Tina, come out?
Yeah, it was released on Friday, May the 28th. So the full album was released for everyone to be able to digitally download if you do that, or if you stream. It's available on iTunes, Amazon, all those platforms, and Spotify,
yeah,
and all that. And then it's available for physical copy. You can order straight from my website, TinaAdair.net, and you can order straight from my website, and I'll sign it for you and all that if you order from me on the website.
The timing's pretty good, really. I mean, I don't think that anyone was holding back any release of any albums when they thought there might be a break in the COVID situation, but it's pretty good timing. Could be just purely accidental. It was time to come out, but as it's coming out, things we talked about earlier, things are kind of opening up, so that if people go find you somewhere, and probably they can probably get from you at a Sister Sage show or wherever you are.
Yeah, they sure can. Because my touring schedule is on my website too, with the girls and everything, and I'll have plenty of them there at the shows and all that as well.
Let me ask you a little bit. We've hit on a couple songs, just the general tone of the new album, Tina Adair, which is being released, and everybody can find it, as you just described. Talk a little bit about From the Ashes of Sorrow, if you wouldn't mind.
Oh, yeah. This is a sweet little song that...
it's a real nice waltz. I say it's a nice little waltz.
It is, yeah. And Adam Englehart actually brought this to me. I think it was in a catalog that... he had there at Sony, but it was we were talking about the O'Kanes and all, and Jamie O'Hara wrote this song, and no one had ever cut it before, and we couldn't believe it, and I just love it. And this is, I probably shouldn't laugh about this, but my when I let my mama hear the whole CD first, you know, you gotta let your mama hear it first.
Do you have to sit there while she listens to it, or you just leave and come back?
I shall let her hear it first by herself.
Okay.
And then, but then we listen together so we can have an experience together, I guess.
Okay.
You know, just me and my mama. You know, I don't let my daddy involved. Now, he listens to it on his own. So he's critical of me.
That's what I was wondering, if you sat in the same room. But, okay, I understand. All right. So your mother listened and what?
Yeah, she listened to the Ashes of Sorrow, and she called me just crying. She's like, I love all of them, but that song just makes me cry. And I'm not sure why, but she just, it just, you know, and there doesn't need to be a reason, because that's the way music is. I mean, that's the beauty of music, you know, and certain things make you, you know, feel different emotions and all. And so I have to tell it, you know, like I tell everybody, this is the one that made my mama cry.
I'm sorry, Mom.
I didn't mean to make Mama cry, but she did tell me.
Well, it's really love this song. Still in all, it's a great song, and it's kind of a good test now. If you take something to her and wait for her to cry, you think that's a winner. You check it
exactly.
off, and there's a keeper right
exactly.
there. Thanks, Mama. It's Mama Tears qualified.
That's right. That's exactly.
It's a really pretty song. I have written pretty song next to still got a long way to go. Also, that's Ronnie Bowman and
Ronnie Bowman. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get any better than Ronnie Bowman writing, and he and Garnet Bowman sang most of the backgrounds or the harmonies on the album for the most part. There are some other guests on there, but they did the majority of the work. But I got this song from Ronnie. I had been over at Ronnie and Garn's house and was getting some material. He made me a CD, and this song just kept coming back and coming back. And I think we were going to try to do this as Sister Sadie at one point in time, but it didn't make the album, and it still was in the back of my head, and I love it. To me, it just kind of shows it's a more gentler side of the album, the full album. But it's a beautiful song, and another song that's never been cut before. And
really?
Ronnie was telling me that, you know, it's been in a catalog for about 10 years, and I just couldn't believe no one had cut it before, because it's a very well written song.
It is, and I'll say this again, and it's I've said this to you before. Your voice is. I'll put it in these different terms. Your voice is so flexible in your ability to bring out the lyrics, which is you've already brought to me already that this is something that you really listen for. It's very pretty. Your voice is really, it's just a pretty song, and you really do it right. You really do it. You hit all the sentiment in it, and it's just really a pretty, pretty song.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, thank you. I try my best as a singer to immerse myself fully into that song and deliver, you know, the lyric as if, you know, I'm living every word of that
yeah.
song, and I just really try. I've always tried very hard to try to accomplish that.
Well, that's good. And your voice, I mean, you can be very up-tempo and quick when it needs to be, and then you can really, ballady-type tunes, you can really just breathe them alive, yeah. I think.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate that.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about... I don't think we've hit God Will Make a Way, then I want to lead you to the last song that I want you to introduce off of the album. But let's talk a little bit about God Will Make a Way, which is just a very uplifting tune. But talk about that. That was co-written by Glenn Duncan.
Yeah. And I was talking to Glenn, and, you know, I always like to try to do a couple gospel songs per album. And I told Glenn, I said, you know, I'm a huge fan of your Jesus Built a Bridge to Heaven. You know, Glenn,
mm-hmm.
you know, wrote that, and I said, you got another one of those? That's what I asked Glenn. I was like, you got another Jesus Built a Bridge to Heaven, you know? And he, and I don't know if he said this, you know, I'm not quoting him, but in a roundabout way, he was like, well, if I don't, I'll go home and write one. So he actually, you know, by the time he got home, I think he probably knew what song he wanted to send me, and he had it sent to me, and I was like, that's it. That's exactly what I was looking for, and it was God Will Make a Way. So he had obviously already had that written, and he sent that to me, and I was like, yep, this is the one I
that's
want.
The one.
Glenn, that's the one.
Glenn was a guest on the show last year, and uh-huh. I made it a two-part. Every once in a while, I make it a two-part. Well, if you know Glenn...
Yep.
You know why? I don't have to tell you why. And I was thrilled to do it because he's a hero of mine from forever. But you know,
yeah.
Glenn, you know it would take two parts to get him in the can for this program. And I didn't try to throw up the slow down sign. I was thrilled. Every story was like, wow. So I was like, yeah.
Glenn, he gets you in. Like, you can't not be intrigued by the story.
Right.
It doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
And I have been around Glenn a lot. As a matter of fact, I've always wanted to work with Glenn, with him producing in some form, you know, or fashion. And that almost happened about 10, 12 years ago. And then just timing and financially and all that kind of stuff, it didn't work out. But we had been talking, you know, and so then fast forward to now and everything. I don't think I've heard, I'm pretty sure I haven't heard this same story twice. And these stories are absolutely amazing. They're like, and I told him in the studio, I said, Glenn, you need to write a book or something, or at least, you know, if you don't write a book, at least let somebody put you somewhere and put a video on you, and you tell these stories, because this is priceless. And most the stories are harmless, you know what I mean?
Oh, but sure.
It's not like they're incriminating.
No.
Harmless. They're just great stories, and Glenn knows everybody, and he's played
with everybody. That's exactly, you know? Right.
And as a matter of fact, I was in the studio the other day talking to Adam, and we were talking about Reba, one of my heroes, all-time heroes, mm-hmm. not just singing, but just as a human being and as a business person and all that kind of stuff. And I've always looked up to her since I've been a little girl, but probably about 5 years old. And we got talking, and he's like, you know, her and Glenn are good friends. Because he's like, you ever met her? And I was like, not really, you know. I said, one of my best friends used to sing background for her, and he goes, well, her and Glenn know each other, you know, because Glenn, he played for Reba.
He played for everybody, yep.
Yes, he just played with everybody. So I love it. I love Glenn. He is, you can't listen. If you're feeling bad about you, this is what I say. If you're ever having a down moment, okay, you're kind of down or what, kind of down in the dumps or whatever, call Glenn. He will make you feel like $1 million. He's just so excited.
You are right. You're right. And just so we're sure, he's not bragging about these connections. He's not bragging. It's just part of what it's like. Like to me, I get up this morning and I start my car and I go to work and I eat my lunch.
Yeah.
To him,
there's a lot of people that you would think, oh, they're just name drop, whatever. That's not the way Glenn approaches it. This is not, I don't even look at it that way, but not with him. You know, he's just, gosh, and he's just a super fantastic human being. I mean, they just don't come no better than Glenn.
I agree. Let's have you introduce. Happens to be the last cut on the album. I Met the Man. This is exactly up your alley, and it might mm-hmm. be the second part of the gospel kind of spiritual tune that you have. So let's do that. I'll let you go. Let's introduce. Fill us in on I Met the Man. Powerful song.
Yeah.
It's a gospel. And it's got a little funky beat to it. I mean, it's one you can snap your fingers to.
Yeah, this is one that makes me want to pick up a tambourine.
That's why I have people like you on the show. That's exactly the feeling. You're in a gathering somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It was written by a good friend of mine, a great songwriter, Bill Tennyson. He's here in Nashville, and he sent this to me. And Bill writes in that kind of vein, and I love it. But he's a real kind of soulfully bluesy type singer and writer, and you put all that, tie that up into a gospel song, mm-hmm. and that's where you get tambourines and stuff, you know. So and I love it, and this is right down my alley. I love getting talk about just feeling happy when you're singing a song. I do with this one. This makes you smile, or makes me smile anyhow.
Makes me think of my relatives' get-togethers where they would play music after dark because the farm was, you know, you're done for the day, and we would visit them, and everybody played music, and they'd stomp around
and do that.
This would be a good stomping around song.
Exactly, and I wanted to try to in it a little differently with the background vocals, and mm-hmm. so we got to, gosh, some of my heroes, we got to call Vicki Hampton and Robert Bailey in to sing, and they actually did like some BGVs, not just your typical, I mean, they did the typical harmonies, the trio mm-hmm. or whatever, but then we did some repeats and some different BGVs and stuff, and it was an honor to get to work with them, because they have been in town for 35 plus years doing this, and have sang with everybody from, I think they're out with Garth now or something like that, but, you know, sang with Dolly and you know, Bonnie Raitt and all of these people. So, you know, Winona, I mean, they know what
they
took me to school.
You live in some high weeds there, Tina.
Well, no, I'm lucky. Like I said, I'm very lucky. Thankful to Adam Englehart for making that phone call in a minute, but they were super sweet to me and very, you know, I mean, they just took me to school. I will say that. You know, you think you might know a little bit about singing until you're around somebody like Robert Bailey and Vicki Hampton, and then you're like, but I enjoy that. I enjoy learning, and I enjoy, you know, getting to just sit back and listen and watch and try to soak it in and learn as much as I can, you know.
Well, we're so glad you did it for this album. The album is Tina Adair, and it's on EMG, and you just heard Tina talk quite a bit about it. We're going to end then with that tune, I Met the Man. Tina, I'm so glad you got this album out. I'm so glad you sent it to me because I enjoyed the heck out of talking to you in October of last year, and I just feel positive about things that are going to happen for this album and for the music business and the industry and all the folks who crave it. I think they're going to like this album and like your appearances with Sister Sadie or whoever you appear with. So this is good. I'm feeling upbeat.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. That means a lot to me, and thanks to all your listeners out there, and I appreciate you playing my music and all the other good bluegrass music. I appreciate you so much.
Well, I appreciate you. Let's then get to the last cut on the Tina Adair album, I Met the Man. This will get you stomping around, so clear the chairs out so you have room as you're listening to the show. I'll give you a little bit of advance warning. Go ahead and move your front chairs around. Get a little space where you can do some good old stomping and have a good time. And Tina, thanks so much. We'll catch you down the road, hopefully.
Thank you, Steve. Look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, bye.